Sairam listeners, good morning on this beautiful Thursday. Today happens to be a very auspicious day. It's the Raksha Bandhan Day and a day that we celebrate the sacred bond between brothers and sisters, and the Upakarma Day, or the day in which the sacred thread is changed. And even as I say that, a number of memories flood my mind. Swami's students would do this ceremony of changing the sacred thread together in the hostel prayer hall, and just the day before, Swami would personally bless a tray filled with these, you know, turmeric smeared threads. But there is no time for us to get lost in memories, however tempting they may be, for we have a show to do and questions to answer. Welcome to this week's Radio Sai Answering Booth, a show where we invite questions from listeners, questions relating to day-to-day situations and problems, and see what could be the Sai way to handle them. If you have such a question, you can send it to me by mailing to Prem at radiosai.org. That's P-R-E-M at radiosai.org. I would really appreciate it if it could be in your own voice, if you could record the question and send it across. Alright then, let's start with this week's quote. This is from the works of one of my favorites and one of the all-time greats, Rabindranath Tagore. The quote goes thus: "Let me not pray to be sheltered from dangers, but to be fearless in facing them. Let me not beg for the stilling of my pain, but for the heart to conquer it." Well, that is only part of a poem. Remaining, we'll keep it for another day. But I guess that's a perfect quote for the program such as ours, where we deal so much with problems. What's interesting about that quote is, Tagore makes a prayer on what he must pray. Right? He's making a prayer on what he should be praying. He says, "God, let me not pray that you remove all problems, but let me pray for the strength to conquer them." There are two aspects to this quote. Why is he making a prayer as to what he should pray? And the other is, why must one seek to conquer problems rather than seeking protection from problems? Well, for today, I'm going to stick only to the first aspect. For want of time, we'll discuss the second aspect on another occasion. So why is Tagore saying, "Let me not pray for that and let me pray for this"? When we were in school or college, the teacher will always encourage us to ask questions, right? One of the reasons a teacher does that is based on the question that the student asks, the teacher will know how much the student has understood the topic really. The teacher will be able to gauge to an extent the level the student is in, based on whether the question is too simple, complex, or sometimes completely off the track. In the same way, our prayers define the level in which we are, the level in spiritual evolution that we are in. Once I was asking an elder, you know, why do we write letters to Swami when we know that Swami knows everything? And he told me a very interesting point. He said, certainly Swami does not need, but if we keep a record of the letters that we have written to Swami and then read it after a few years, we will know how much we have progressed in our life. And I feel Tagore captures that in this quote of his. We can pray to God to solve our problems, but let us not be tempted to make that simple prayer, "Let's pray, Swami. Let any problem come. You stand with me and give me the courage to face it." I think when you first start learning driving a car, for example, you can hope and pray that there should be no traffic on the road. But all the time, your goal is to learn driving so well that it just does not matter to you how many cars come on the road. Same is the case with problems we face. Pray to Swami to solve them, definitely. But all the while, let the main prayer be, "Swami, give me the courage and the ability to be unaffected by these problems." So with that, let's get to the question on today's show. Questions, I should say. We have two questions and they are quite different from each other. The first question for today is from a regular listener of Radio Sai. His name is Mahidhar Nyayapati. He's from Bangalore. He has sent us a long question. I will myself be reading it out to you because he has not sent us the recording. So here goes the question. I work in an Indian startup which is making instruments for medical diagnostics. Prior to this, I worked in an IIT as project staff, and before that, I did my master's in IISc, that is Indian Institute of Science, and bachelor's from the National Institute of Technology. Since the time I have joined the company, people have been treating me like an alien or maybe I feel that way. All the time, they would tell me I am from academics and I need to grow up. All the time, they keep giving me advices on how to be in a company and stuff like that, as if I am an idiot. They force me to drink alcohol during parties, and since I refused, they have designated me as asocial. They have played many political games with me. They impose the most detestable tasks on me. Whenever I give any suggestions, they are outright rejected. Now the worst part is, the data they made me generate is being discussed by so-called senior members and I am ignored in all meetings. It's just a six-year-old company, so senior members are 25-year-olds who joined the company just a few years back. In short, despite being from a good educational background, I am working like a diploma holder. I do understand that Swami expects us to be selfless, but at this point of time, I am like a straight tree being cut down. My humility and kindness are misused. The only reason I am staying in this company is because it is a company that is contributing to Indian manufacturing prowess, and we all know that our Swami was the real Bharat Bhagya Vidata. I am staying because Swami expects us to kill our ego and engage in selfless service without expecting results. The question is, should I leave the job or stay for the reasons mentioned above? How do I relate to Swami's teachings now under such circumstances? So that, dear listeners, is the question of Maidar Nyayapati. Sending us the question. It's a long question and I think it warrants a long answer. So to start with, let me try to break it up into issues. Let's see if we can point out four or five things which are really standing out and let's see if we can give answers for each of those issues. As I can see, there are basically three of them in the problem which is mentioned by Brother Mahidhar. Your good work not getting its due recognition. That's one. You're not being accepted into a peer group for various reasons like a different academic background or your refusal to indulge in their way of having fun. That's one point. And the third one, as I can see it, is the fear that your goodness is being misused. Of course, there are other issues in that question, like if this company is giving you the opportunity to serve the country the way you thought it would give you. Well, I think that's a purely professional call to take. I'm not going to go into that. I will stick to the three issues I mentioned. Let's start with peer pressure. Dear listeners, in my opinion, there are certain aspects of Swami's instructions and message that have to be kept above discussion, above argumentation, above reasoning. So in my opinion, I think as Swami's devotees, we have to maintain these as uncompromisables. There is no negotiation on that. So, Brother Mahidhar, what you're doing is right, absolutely right now, if you ask me. And any situation which challenges these principles that we keep, I think we have to treat them purely as challenges. Why I'm saying this is, I think in life, we'll encounter problems which are of two kinds. You know, one kind of problem is probably pointing at some mistakes in us, where we have to look at ourselves and see where we have to correct ourselves. The other comes to kind of challenge our resolve. So I think in peer pressure, when our principles such as these are questioned, I think we have to treat them purely as challenges. And I've come across many people, initially they get mocked at for these kind of self-disciplines, but over a period of time, they earn a lot of respect. So Brother Mahidhar, I think when it comes to that question, you're doing absolutely the right thing. Please hold on to that. That's what will make Swami happy. Having said that, when you go through situations like this, probably we should take them as an opportunity to learn to deal with such situations. You don't hurt the other person. Try to negotiate these situations without compromising on your principles. At the same time, to learn the tact or the knack necessary to deal with such situations. And that's what Swami would always tell us. Coming to the next part of that question, which was the recognition part. You're doing good work, but you're not getting recognized. And of course, the question itself had a mention that Swami does expect us to work without any expectations. Absolutely true. I think if we have to do work spiritually, we have to do work the way Swami would want us to do. I think that's exactly how Swami would expect us to do. Do play our role, play to the best possible, put in our best efforts, but expect nothing in return. But having said that, I think all of us are endeavoring to do that, you know, being at Prashantanilayam, being at Radio Sai, even we are striving to achieve that kind of an excellence. It's an ideal situation. That's exactly what Swami wants us to do. But the fact is, not all of us are there yet, right? So what we have to do is train ourselves to get there. I think there are two things there. Train ourselves to get there. And how do we maintain a balance, or how do we protect ourselves till we get there? There are two techniques I can think of. One is, of course, what Swami used to always tell us, that do work as an offering to God. I think there is nothing better than that. There is no way better than that. Make it a habit. You know, whatever work you do, let's say you take a project. At the end of the project, mentally offer it to Swami and say, Swami, I'm offering this project to you. End of the day, probably before you go to sleep, say, Swami, whatever work I've done today, I offer it to you. Or, you know, at the end of the week, whatever it is, make it a habit to start offering mentally whatever work you've done. And this is something which Swami would tell us, even as we were students, this is something which we all try to do. And this will definitely give us the opportunity to separate effort from the result of that effort. How does that happen? Swami explains that when you start making an offering of all the work that you do, what you do, you start doing it as an offering to God, and whatever comes as a result, you will start taking it as Swami's prasadam. And when you start taking whatever comes as Swami's prasadam, there is nothing like good prasadam, bad prasadam. Whatever comes as Swami's prasadam, and I think eventually over a period of time, your excellence in your effort, your excellence in your work will not depend on the way it is accepted by your peers or by your team members. At the same time, you will see that it will also give you the ability to look at your work and review it from time to time based on the response it gets. Let's say you do a work, your boss points out mistakes at it, or your colleagues point out mistakes at it. Initially, when you're attached to the work and the result, it will hurt you a lot. But when you start doing this as a technique, you will find that you'll be able to do your best part. And whatever criticism comes, you will be able to very objectively, in a very detached manner, look at your work and see, okay, where am I going wrong? Where can I correct myself? And you will see that your productivity will increase. This is a technique which Swami himself has told. The other way, which has worked for a lot of us, I also try it out, that when we do some work, yeah, we have to do without expectations. Yeah, we have to do it without wanting anything in return. But we still are in the process. So we do seek recognition. So one thing what we can do is, let's say at some time this thought props up. You know, I've done my work well. I've done my best part. But there is no good recognition for it. I'm not being appreciated enough for it. At that time, make it a habit to stop yourself and ask this question, saying that, why am I still seeking recognition? You know, from asking, why am I not getting recognition, every time this thought props up, if you are able to practice and make it a habit to immediately ask this question, Swami, why am I still seeking recognition? This will not happen overnight. This will not happen over a weekend. It is not that one day you can wake up and start doing work like that. This will have to be done over a period of time with conscious practice. And you will see that as this becomes a habit, as this becomes a practice, the balance between you doing work for recognition and you doing work without seeking any recognition, without any desire for the fruit of that effort, that balance will increase more towards the latter side. And whenever we talk about the response the people around us give for our work, Brother Mahendra, I think what we all have to remember is what others think of us, the way people respond to our work, I think is not so much in our control. So when we start worrying about how will people look at me, you know, when will people accept my work, when will people appreciate my work, when will I get my due recognition, we are placing our peace of mind, our happiness on something which is outside of us. But when you start doing this practice, when we start doing this of asking ourselves, Swami, why am I still seeking recognition? How can I stop seeking recognition? How can I stop worrying about the result? When you start doing this, you are bringing the control for happiness back into yourself. And I think that's the key in this whole process. As I said, it doesn't happen overnight. It needs a lot of practice, as Swami would very often say. in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells Arjuna that it is only through practice the control over mind can be achieved. And this is nothing but that. And that's exactly what we are talking. So this is a practical technique I can think of. I know many people who've tried it. I tried myself too. Coming to the last part of that question. Is my goodness being misused? What do we mean by misuse? Probably this is a question, Brother Mahendra, you'll have to answer yourself. What do you mean by misuse? Is your humility being used to get wrong things done? Or is it that someone else is taking credit for your good work? In my opinion, the latter case is not as dangerous as the first one, where your humility is being used to do wrong things. One thing we all always have to remember is qualities like humility, goodness, detachment. These are not weaknesses. Having these qualities will not leave you compromised. This is something which Swami would tell us, that we think, what if I'm good all the time and what if people take me for a ride? It can never happen that these qualities can leave you compromised. These qualities are our strengths. They are never our weaknesses. I think it's all right if somebody else is taking credit for your work. I know it is painful, but it's not so dangerous. But if your goodness is being misused or is being used to do the wrong thing or to harm somebody else, I think that's when the alarm signals have to go out. I hope this you will apply to your condition, your situation accordingly. I'm not going into the specifics. The sub-part of that question, that part which was asked was, you know, about your qualifications are more than what is required for the job. Are you being underutilized for this job? There is one way I can probably suggest that you look at the situation. If you were a senior and if a junior was going through the same situation, what will be the best suggestion you would give him? Would you look at this person who is extremely talented, who is stuck up in a job which is probably much lower than his caliber? Will you tell him that, you know, you'll have to quit this job, go and do something better? Or will you look at it and say, this experience will help him? You know, it might not give him the best of in positions or salary or whatever it is, but this experience might help this boy. Many times I have found this as a very, very good technique. Look at your situation as it is happening to a third person. And if you were a person who is wanting to give good advice to this person, what will that advice be? If you feel that moving ahead to another job is the right thing for you to do, and I think then you can go ahead and do it. But there is no experience which goes waste. A job might not give you as much recognition, salary as any other job can give you. But no experience goes waste. No time and effort which is given in any job would go waste. You will always grow rich in experience. So again, I leave this decision to you. You can review it based on this. I'm repeating that technique. Imagine that this is happening to a third person and you want to give a good advice to that person. What will that advice be? Because you know the situation completely well. I'm not too sure of what exactly is the situation you are in, but you know the situation of this person exactly well. If you look at yourself as a third person, what will be your suggestion to that person? And accordingly, you will be able to decide. And my final thoughts on this question before I move to the other questions is, if you decide to lead a spiritual life, you must have spiritual goals. Your efforts should be to achieve success within yourself more than you trying to achieve success in the world outside. But having said that, you know, we all need good working environment. We all need friends. We all need family. We need respect. We need recognition. We need self-respect to be boosted by the respect the others give us. But till we get to that state where none of these things matter to us, we have to strive for these. But in the process of striving for these, we only have to keep in mind that none of our principles are compromised. In going out to earn friends, let us not compromise our principles. In going out to please our boss, never compromise your principles. And when I say principles, as Swami's devotees, what you have chosen as, you know, this is Swami's message and I have to stick to it at all costs. Those things never compromise for the purpose of gaining friends, gaining recognition and respect among your peers or even your family. I think that can be said as a thumb rule. So with that, once again, thank you, Brother Mahendra. I hope we gave you a little bit of food for thought. If you got clarity, more than happy. But if you at least got a few tips to think about so that you can eventually find clarity in the problem you're facing, we'll be very, very happy and we would very gratefully offer that at Swami's lotus feet. The next listener who sent us a question for our answering booth is from Delhi. So first we'll listen to the question. We'll be grateful to her that she's sent her question in her own voice. She's recorded it and sent it along. So we'll look at the question and see if we can come up with an answer for that.
Sai Ram Prem. This is Bharti from Delhi. By Swami's grace, I have had a chance of listening to a lot of Satsang Hall talks some time back. And I think it is a great idea to start an initiative like this. In fact, I have been holding on to quite a few questions, seeking answers from Swami in some form or another. So I would just like to put one such question to your team. And though you did mention that we should not be putting philosophical questions on Ramayana or Mahabharata, there are certain doubts on how should one try and lead their lives while trying to practice these concepts ingrained in these epics. I just recently read this article from the Bhagavad Gita, which goes on something like this. Na dveshtya kushlam karma kushle nanu shajyate yagi sattva samavishto medhavi chinna sanshyah, which translates as, a renunciate endowed with sattvic qualities is wise and free of doubts. He neither dislikes unpleasant action nor clings to pleasant action. Further, detailing thus, all actions when analyzed fall into two categories, pleasant and unpleasant. They are like other pairs of opposites, which is dvandvas. Pleasantness and unpleasantness are felt not alone at the fruition of action, but also right when they are begun. In fact, just when they are conceived. So the seeker should equip himself with the nir-dvandva attitude right from the beginning. Krishna has been advocating this nir-dvandvata all along. Thus, the prescription is that no resentment for unpleasant actions or any special clinging to the pleasant ones should be felt or fostered by the seeker. His intelligence should be very clear about this non-dual perspective. Now, my query on this while I was reading it is, while I have been reading and trying to live by the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita, I am often put these questions by friends who are married, that it is easy to talk and practice such teachings when you are single and you don't have responsibilities. I have been asked the question on how should a parent react when his child has taken to drugs or loses 1 year at school. In a situation like this, how can a parent afford to have a renunciate attitude? That is, he neither dislikes unpleasant actions nor clings to pleasant actions. Could a parent say that it is all right with me, that my son is not taking the 12th class board exams, and say the action and the consequences are neither unpleasant, in fact pleasant for me? At this point, what they say makes a lot of sense to me, and I actually have no answer either for them or for the audience whom we train in our corporate programs, where again we face almost similar queries, mostly from the middle-aged audience who are struggling with similar issues. Hope I was able to put my query clearly to you. I would request you, if you could, look at giving a suitable answer, and hope to get a reply soon. Thank you so much. Sai Ram, Bharti.
Thank you, Ms. Bharti from Delhi, for sending us that question. Before going into the answer, for the information of the listeners, the verse that she was referring to is, of course, as she said, from the Bhagavad Gita. It's from the last chapter, the 18th chapter, and it's the 10th verse, to be more precise. Well, now, just to summarize the question for all our listeners, this verse apparently talks about how a seeker should not see duality in actions. Well, some as unpleasant and some other as pleasant. And so the person will not be attached to one and be repulsive towards the other kind of actions. So how can parents follow this? This seems to be impractical when it comes to parenting, especially when you say the children indulge in wrong acts like substance abuse or bad company. And how can one look away thinking that there is no good and bad? Because the verse in the Bhagavad Gita which is quoted says that there is nothing like pleasant and unpleasant, there is nothing like good and bad. Okay, so I'll try to answer this question in three parts. Firstly, I think it's important to understand the context in which this verse occurs in the Bhagavad Gita. It's in a completely different context, so I think understanding that will make it more clear. And second thing is, I don't agree with one line in that commentary that which Ms. Bharati read out. The commentary says that Krishna has been advocating nirdvandvata all along. Thus, the prescription is that no resentment for unpleasant actions or any special clinging to the pleasant ones should be felt or fostered by the seeker. I think that line is a bit confusing, and it is making a suggestion that one should not differentiate between good and bad. We will go into that a bit, so that will be the second part. And lastly, we will look at the question raised with respect to parents bringing up children. Certainly the Bhagavad Gita is applicable to all stages in life and definitely for parenting too. So we'll look into that and see how this verse can be looked at from the point of view of parenting. So coming to the context of the shloka, as I said, this is from the 18th chapter, which is the last chapter. And the 18th chapter in many ways is like the summary of the whole Gita. You would see that Krishna is summarizing whatever he's been speaking about to Arjuna. Okay, so the chapter begins with a very, very beautiful question that Arjuna asks Krishna. You know, he says, Krishna, I wish to understand the difference between sannyasa and tyaga. Arjuna tells to Krishna that he wants to understand the difference between sannyasa and tyaga, which is renunciation and sacrifice. And Krishna explains very beautifully that a sannyasi is one who gives up the prescribed action, whereas the tyagi is one who gives up the fruits of the action that he performs. I hope you're following the difference. It's a very, very subtle difference. He says a sannyasi or a renunciant, he gives up the action that is prescribed for that stage in life, whereas a tyagi performs the action but gives up the fruit of the action that is prescribed for him. And Krishna goes on to say that, you know, when a person becomes a sannyasi, he may still have an eye on the benefits of a spiritual life, because when you are giving up worldly life and taking up sannyasa, I think there is this belief that spiritual life is better. So you are looking at achieving something, right? You know, you are looking at gaining something in the process of this spiritual journey that you're undertaking. So Krishna says that even a sannyasi will have his eye on some kind of spiritual benefit in the path that he's undertaking. But a tyagi is one who has given up even that, because if you're looking at giving up all the fruits of your actions, you're not even looking at the spiritual benefit that you get. And so Krishna says that the tyagi is better off than a sannyasi. And in fact, the explanation suggests that even a sannyasi, even a renunciant, will have to come to the stage of a tyagi before he is able to achieve the ultimate. Okay? And in the following verses, Krishna says very beautifully, very typically, the way we have heard even from Swami, you know, he says, Swami would say, now tesamlo, in my opinion, and that's typically how Krishna says here, in my opinion, Krishna says, to sacrifice the fruits of one's action is better than giving up action itself. And Krishna explains by saying that, you know, when you say a sannyasi has to give up activities, but even a sannyasi cannot give up activities which are supposed to be good activities, like charity, or, you know, some sannyasis always do yajnas. The scriptures say that even sannyasis cannot give up certain activities which are defined as good or beneficial or noble activities. So there is no question of one being able to give up all actions. So then that's why Krishna says that, so it is better off if you are able to do what you're supposed to do given the stage of life that you are in, and you are able to give up the fruits of the actions that you perform. Now coming to this particular shloka which the questioner has raised, In this shloka, Krishna goes on to say that a true tyagi, when performing his prescribed duties, will never look at some activities as unpleasant and some activities as pleasant. So in other words, let's say a man is a weaver and he wishes to become a spiritual man. He will not say, oh, weaving is a very low work. You know, I should become a scholar. I should become a teacher. A businessman will not say, oh, business has got to do with money. And I don't want to do anything to do with money because money is not spiritual. So let me become a doctor. You know, that is a more holy profession. Krishna says a true sattvic person or a pure person will not have this sort of dvandva or duality. He will do what he is supposed to do without having this kind of repulsion or attraction towards one activity or the other, right? So, Lord Krishna explains, one who gives up one's duty because it's unpleasant is a tamasic person. You know, now do you see the clear definition which Lord Krishna gives? He says a pure person, sattvic person, does not differentiate as this is pleasant and that is unpleasant when he is doing his duty. But a tamasic person will choose to do that part of the duty that he finds pleasant and will try to avoid doing that part of the duty that is unpleasant. And this is the dvandva which is being referred to in this particular part of the Bhagavad Gita. Okay, and it's also very important to note that in the verse, the words which Krishna uses is not good and bad. He says kushala and akushala, right? The meaning of these Sanskrit words is the pleasant and unpleasant. It is not about the good and bad or right and wrong. It's about the person's preferences. You know, when you say pleasant and unpleasant, it's about likes and dislikes of the person who is involved. So going back to that statement which I said in that commentary, which did not sound right to me, that, you know, that statement which said that Krishna has been advocating nirdvandvata, a state where one does not see the difference between good and bad all along. I mean, if you look at the entire battle, the battle is between the forces of good and bad. So where is the question of Lord Krishna saying that there is, you know, treat good and bad, giving up discrimination and saying that there is no good and bad? In fact, there is that point which Swami would often quote, where the King Dhritarashtra, the father of the Kauravas, he goes to Krishna and says, you know, why are you being partial like this? My sons are also equally close to you in relation as the Pandavas are. And Lord Krishna gives the explanation that the Pandavas are righteous and so I am with them. Wherever Dharma is, Lord Krishna says, I am on their side. So this is very, very important to note. There is discrimination between good and bad. And it's very, very important part of any spiritual journey. So this discriminating between good and bad, right and wrong, I think it has to be done till the very end of the spiritual journey, where one reaches that state where he doesn't see the difference between good and bad. But the path, the process is always this discrimination between good and bad. So finally, the last part which I wanted to speak about is this question when it talks about parents. So this verse when it comes to the context of parenting. We were talking about Dhritarashtra. In fact, if you look at the life of Dhritarashtra, there is no better example for this particular verse than he himself. Because, you know, when we bring up our children, it is very important to do what is our duty. So coming to Dhritarashtra, Swami would say that many elders and many scholars in the court, his well-wishers would come and advise him that he is spoiling his children, that he is not correcting his children when they're going wrong. And Dhritarashtra would often say that, no, how do I say no to my son? How do I disappoint my son? How can I not fulfill his dreams? I think this is the nirdvandvata that Krishna is referring to. That as a parent, you're choosing that, oh, no, I don't want to be unpopular with my children, so I will not be very strict. I will not shout at them when they're doing something very, very wrong. I think this is the difference between the kushala and the akushala, the pleasant and the unpleasant, which Krishna says that a spiritual seeker has to go past when he's performing his duty. There is nothing like a pleasant and unpleasant. If it is your duty, you're supposed to do it. Right? I think this is the nirdvandvata that Krishna is referring to here. So in performing the role of a parent, we should not say that, I can't do this, this will make me unpleasant, unpopular. And in the process, sacrificing the action itself. That is what Krishna says is the sign of tamasic nature. He says, when you give up a certain action, which is supposed to be your dharmic action, because it's unpleasant, then it is a sign that you are indulging in tamas, or the lowest form of quality. you know, certainly parents have to discriminate between good and bad when it comes to bringing up children. Don't hesitate to play that unpleasant role at sometimes. There is no choice. As Swami would very, very beautifully say in some of his discourses, he says, when you're bringing up children, there should be love and there should be law. Lavu kuda unnali, law kuda unnali, as Swami would beautifully put it in Telugu. He says, there should be love and compassion and kindness in your upbringing. At the same time, there should be law, there should be discipline, there should be strictness. And Swami would say, without the law, the love will be wasted. So I think as parents, there is no question of, there is no good and bad, so I don't want to correct my child. So I hope this explanation explains what was the context of this shloka and what is the nirdvandata that Krishna is actually referring to. It is not about, there is nothing good and bad, so I can do anything. But when it comes to my duty, I should not discard something because it's unpleasant or avoid something because I don't like doing it. I think that is the non-duality that's being referred to in this shloka. And as I said, it's in the 18th chapter. It's like a beautiful summary of whatever Krishna has been explaining to Arjuna. So it's a very, very interesting shloka. Thanks to the listener, in the process of trying to answer the question, I went and read up a little more about the shloka, and I find it, it's absolutely perfectly applicable, especially to parents. So I hope this question has been answered suitably. If you still have anything more to ask or anything more to add, you can always write to me at prem@radiosai.org. So once again, thank you, Ms. Bharti. She's from Delhi and she wrote this question. Probably just to give a little more context, she's one of the people in Delhi who run programs for corporates and for families about how to bring Swami's message into daily life. So this is one of the questions that she was asked during one of the sessions. So thank you, Ms. Bharti, for sharing that with us. And I do hope you'll give us more questions such as these, because they're definitely challenging and I'm sure it will be helpful for the other listeners too. So thank you, Ms. Bharti, for sending us that question from Delhi. With that, listeners, it's time for me to hand over the baton to Raghu for the next segment. But I will be back at 12:30 with Arvind for the afternoon satsang. I hope you found the program useful. If you have a question you would like me to discuss on this show, you can record your question and mail it to me. And my mail ID is prem@radiosai.org. That's prem@radiosai.org. I would really appreciate it if you could send me a recording, but a mail with a question typed is also welcome. But keep in mind, let your questions be about applying Swami's message in daily life in real life situations. So thank you for joining me on this week's Radio Sai Answering Booth. Thanks to Sister Bharti from Delhi and Brother Mahidhar from Bangalore for their questions. I most humbly offer this program at Swami's Lotus Feet. Jai Sai Ram.
Prashanti Nilaya Nivasa Paraj Suno Mere Sai Paraj Suno Paraj suno mere param kripalo paraj suno paraj suno mere param kripalo Parteshwara Sai Deva ಪರಮ ಕೃಪಾಲೋ. ಸತ್ಯ ಸನಾತನ.